Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another week of Passive Income Pilots. What's up, Ryan?
Oh, not much. I'm excited to keep to our theme here last couple episodes, talking about the economy, diversification, stocks, bonds, mutual funds.
Absolutely.
Like, where do you put your money right now and how do you read the economy and what is going on? Should we do real estate? Should we do stocks? Should we do crypto? Should we do all these things? Tate, what do you do?
Well, you know where we all land. You know where Ryan and I land on this.
Yeah.
You know, we're very, very tuned into the private markets and we like the private markets and we like real estate. But I think Elliot does as well. Today we have an amazing guest, Elliot Eisenberg, PhD. I heard Elliot speak, 5 years ago, summer of 2020. I've been on his mailing list ever since then. And I've always wanted to get him on the show. We finally got him booked. So episode 131, we finally have Elliot Eisenberg. He's an internationally acclaimed economist. He's a public speaker. He specializes in making economics fun, relevant, and educational. He earned a bachelor's degree in economics from McGill University in Montreal and a master's and PhD in public administration from Syracuse. He is the creator of the Multifamily Stock Index.
Interesting. I didn't realize that. But Tate, you're missing the best part. He is the bow tie economist.
He's the bow tie economist.
Yeah.
He's regularly featured in cable news programs and on talk and public radio. So very excited to get to the show. Lots of data to unpack. Let's get in.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Elliot, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate you coming and sharing your wisdom. I've been receiving 5 emails a week from you for over 5 years now. So you are a common name in our household. I read your stuff all the time. Love your snippet updates. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm delighted to be here, Tate. Thank you. And now that I've flown an airplane once or twice and have toyed with getting a license, I think it's even more appropriate that I'm on your show.
Incredible. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, that's right. When we spoke years ago about you coming on this show and we were a little bit too early in the process. And when we spoke last week, you took an intro flight. How'd that go?
It went great. It went great. A friend of mine who flies got a Cessna 172, took me up in the air and said, okay, here, fly for a while. So for a half hour, 40 minutes, I was flying just east of the Rocky Mountains in Denver at Centennial Airport, which is, I think, one of the top 10 busiest airports in the country. Who knew?
That's amazing. We got tons to get into today because we really want to unpack what's happening with the federal funds rate, the market cycle, stocks versus private equity, all this sort of stuff we talked earlier. It sounds like you've invested in some commercial real estate in the past. And you said, you know, boy, the last few years haven't been all that great, but over the long term, it's been wonderful. Let's zoom out. And where are we in the big cycle? What can you share with us in terms of where are we? Investors are wondering, are we going up? Are we going down? What's happened with the stock market? In your own words, what's happening?
Look, anything can happen, but I'm pretty optimistic. I'm not wildly thrilled. I think the Q4, what we're in now, Q1, those are probably the weakest quarters we're going to have. There was a lot of pull forward with tariffs and, you know, front running of tariffs and so on, front running of purchasing of cars before the $7,500 credit for electric cars went away on September 30th. So this Q4 is not going to shape up to be a great quarter. And Q1 probably similarly, but the lower rates and the slowly stimulative effects of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and construction depreciation schedules and so on should lift the economy as we go forward. Not wildly stimulative. We're not going to have 3% growth like we have had in Q2 and probably in Q3, but we'll have decent growth. But these next couple of quarters, this one, next one, these are the weakest quarters we're going to get. Tariffs haven't had much of an effect for a bunch of weird reasons, but we're fortunate. The deportations and maybe self-deportations that we know are happening haven't had much of an effect because of luck in a weakening labor market. So we haven't needed the workers. Otherwise, the unemployment would be higher. Tariffs have come in staggered, whether that was a plan and strategy or just an accidental in tactics, I don't know. But nonetheless, it's been a magical process for President Trump. He's been able to do what he wants. He hasn't had much blowback here economically. He's been very fortunate. So I'm guardedly optimistic, I would say.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah. It really did. If someone told me last April we'd be here now and 6 months later, I would have said, you're out of your mind. But again, artificial intelligence spending has been profound. Spending by the wealthy, the top 10, 15% of the population has continued strong, unabated. And the spending of the rich, the stock market, AI, tariffs coming in just piecemeal over time, which hasn't had much of an impact, lower, weaker labor market. My gosh, this has been a series of good luck and fortune. And I am surprised. Absolutely. Pleasantly.
You know, speaking of which, of AI, you know, today Amazon announced the layoff of 30,000 people. And they cited that a lot of AI functions are going to be implemented to reduce these jobs and their employment footprint. How much do you think of that as really AI versus maybe an economy that is softening?
An economy that's softening a little bit. Also, other people are doing it. Oh, if other companies, we saw that in COVID, everyone was dropping workers early on. It was a mistake, but something that's like, but once other people do it, oh, I can jump on the bandwagon. I've wanted to do this for a long time. I now have political cover because no newspaper or Trump's going to single me out because every firm is doing it. So we don't know really why this is happening. I absolutely agree with you. Now, am I afraid of AI munching jobs down the road and causing all kinds of unemployment? Look, you can read almost anybody on AI world who's smart, like Altman or some economists or some business people or women, and they'll tell you whatever you want to hear. There's left, there's center, there's right. It's the best thing ever. It's the worst thing. We're all going to go to hell and AI will take over. It's going to make the world magical. So I don't know. But I can tell you from economic history, we know that seed crops that were invented is the wrong word, by Jethro Tull, not the musician, 500 years ago, it didn't destroy agriculture. 100 years ago, we were all farmers. Now we manage without. Electricity came, it's okay. The internet came, it's okay. Cars came, it's okay. So this will be a big upset to the world, no doubt. There'll be winners and losers, but I'm not terribly concerned, historically speaking, that there's going to be massive unemployment. We have to pay people not to work, blah, blah, blah. I don't buy it.
You know, a lot of pilots on this show are drawn to assets like real estate and alternatives, particularly multifamily, self-storage, industrial, mobile home parks, things like that. From your economic lens, you know, how do these compare to stocks and bonds right now?
The key thing here is having a diversified portfolio. I think that's the argument that's important to think about. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. Whatever the basket is, no matter how good the basket's been, the basket's going to go to hell at some point. And you want to diversify your risk. And to the extent you can and get a good return along the way, do it. I do it too. Look, I'm a very lazy guy. I don't want to own anything. I own a house. I own a car. That's it. I'm done. I rent everything. A boat, a plane, whatever it is I rent. So, but I also have other assets. I'm not putting all my money in the stock market. It's too risky. So I have to have some other investments, some bond investments, some equity investments in some self-storage, for example, that we talked, Tate and I talked about earlier before the show started. You just want to have a diversified portfolio so that you don't risk all your stuff going to hell at the same time. And that includes, grudgingly in my mind, even some Bitcoin. I've not been a big fan of Bitcoin. I'll be very honest. I'm not convinced what it's good for beyond shakedowns, prostitution, drugs, and so on, and attacks on, you know, cyber attacks and paying a cyber. But as an investor, you want to throw in 1% of your assets into Bitcoin or something, another percent into gold? Sure, why not? Again, it's diversification. You don't know what's going to be a winner.
You know, you're famous for your graphs and laughs. That's kind of what people know you for.
Right.
If you could do one chart today that best explains the U.S. economy, what would it be?
Oh, it would be wage growth over time, year over year wage growth over time. And what you'd see is over the last 3 or 4 years, steady decline. Yeah, inflation's declined too. So part of it's the decline of inflation. But there's this whole talk about our jobs are weak. Are we having weak job growth because of a lack of supply of workers or a lack of demand for workers from firms? And I think that the decline in wage growth, year over year wage growth from 7% to 6 to 5 to 4 to now 3.5% says it's a lack of demand by firms. And this goes to your comment earlier about Amazon laying off workers and other firms doing it as well. For whatever reason, whether it's AI or other factors, there's less demand for workers. Unemployment among college grads is 8-9, almost double the national average. So there's certainly some concern and some hesitation on the part of firms and concern on the part of economists as to what exactly is going on.
I'd love to get your sense of where the stock market's going, if you can pull out your crystal ball. You know, Warren Buffett has a great indicator that he looks at, and it's total stock market capitalization.
To GDP,
GDP, exactly. And it's at all-time highs, meaning that's the stock market value as a function of the U.S. gross domestic product is at an all-time high in terms of valuation. Do you think that it has a lot more legs because of the advent of AI and the efficiency gains and the productivity gains that we're seeing out of that? Or do you think that it's overvalued even when taking that into account?
If I knew the answer, I wouldn't have to work for a living. what I'll tell you is I'm a little concerned, but not quite as concerned as I've been in the past, I would say. Because the more you think about it, you look at these firms like Microsoft and Amazon and Meta and so on, Google or Alphabet, and they make a lot of money. Now they're torching it with their investment in AI and building all these data centers and so on and so forth. So I'm a little concerned here. But the problem that you get to is the stock market's veered off center. It's doing well because these big 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 companies that are 40%, 45% of the market cap of the S&P 500 are all tech. So what the stock market has become is a tech index. If tech does well, I'm thrilled. It may or may not, but it's no longer really indicative of the overall health of the economy. How about the other 490 companies in the S&P 500? They haven't done much over the last 12 months, 18 months, whatever it is. So even if the stock market does well, the phrase the stock market isn't Main Street is more true now than it ever was. Even back in the 60s, when we had very high market concentration among the top 8 or 9 companies, they were different. But there was a manufacturing company, there was an automaker, there was a bank, you get the idea. So it was much more diversified than it is now. So the S&P doesn't give you nearly the diversification. It doesn't tell you nearly as much as it did before. Am I concerned it's a little high? Yes. And am I concerned that the firms are just throwing away shareholder equity on useless investments in AI? Yeah, I really am. But that remains to be seen. If AI turns out to be as profitable, as beneficial to GDP as we think, maybe a percentage point or two of GDP. So a big deal here. And these 10 companies get the benefits of it, which is a big maybe. Oh, then it's worth it. No question. But there's two ifs. Does it really help? And will these firms gain the money? When it came to the internet, who gained the money? It was Amazon that gained all the money and Google. Who could have thought these companies up 25 years ago when toilet.com was a hot commodity?
Right. Speaking of AI, you know, I mean, this is something that pilots, maybe not pilots who are in their 40s, 50s are concerned about, but when their kids are coming out of high school and saying, you know, hey, I want to be a pilot, they're concerned about there being a piloting job. What are your thoughts on that? And how do you think AI is going to reshape in industries like aviation? How do we hedge against that?
It's going to take a good long time before someone walks into a plane with no people in it.
I would agree.
It's the case now that big airplanes, the 747s and 717s and 321, Airbus 321s, those planes are run automatically now. The pilots aren't doing much. But on the Airbuses, they have a little joystick on the side. They do all the work with the joystick, right? They're not actually doing anything with the big, whatever it's called, you guys know.
The yoke.
The
yoke. They're barely working now. They're just using the little pinky to move the little joystick on the side. And they don't show anybody that.
Oh, man, this is going to offend a cross segment of our listeners. And
I'm laughing.
It will be the case.
Pinky.
Okay. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's the thumb they're using. But the point is, we have adopted to it. But until we can fly the plane with no one in the cockpit or the flight deck or whatever it's now called, we're a ways off. We're a ways off.
Can I politely push back on that a little bit? Because I agreed with you like 2 years ago. I was like, you know what? You know what's harder than flying a plane is getting a car integrated with, you know, society. And I took a Waymo for the first time 2 weeks ago. And let me tell you, that was impressive. I was in Scottsdale. I was at a conference. This thing just buzzed right into the airport pickup line, super busy, maneuvered a bunch of cars. I got in. The thing was driving smoother than I can ever drive. Took me all the way to the hotel. Took me all around Scottsdale for the weekend.
No bad music, no chit-chat either.
That's right. Exactly.
No chit-chat, no tip, no weird conversation, nothing. It was lovely. I'm not saying that aviation is, you know, less complex than that, but man, maneuvering streets and having all this, and you know, I kind of give the same argument. It's like AI and automation. It's you know, it's not about pilot error. It's about what we prevent in accidents. And when the automation fails, we're there to pick it up. So interesting thought. So let me kind of pivot back to what Tate was talking about a little bit, which, you know, if you had a son or daughter who was just getting into aviation, you know, they just got their job at the airlines making $250K a year. What would you do to tell them right now to build sustainable wealth and financial freedom over the next decade? What moves would they make?
With that income, it's start to save. You know, maybe you're 35 when you're starting to make this good money because you've had other careers. You've been maybe in the military, whatever it is, and you're now working for Delta or American or whatever it is. Start to save. You've got to save money. It's the single most important thing. Saving money early is critical. Don't start saving when you're 60. It's not that it's too late, but the doubling periods are just every 7 or 8 years. You're running out of doubling periods. That money you put away when you're 20, 25, 30, that's golden money. Hold off on buying the damn latte at Starbucks for $12 and save the money. Buy yourself a coffee maker at home for $500 and baby yourself, but try and conserve money to the extent you can early on in life and invest it in the stock market, put some in assets and in multifamily and whatever it is, car parking lots, you know, whatever it is, self-storage. But begin to look around and begin to educate yourself about these things. But you've got to save money.
Yeah, that's key.
Don't aim for home runs.
We just did an episode on this. And yeah, I like that. Don't go for home runs. You know, those base hits add up.
Base hits an occasional stolen base and you're going to be golden because you have time on your side. If you start when you're 30 or 25, you've got your 40 years ahead of you. Yeah, you're going to be a multimillionaire without doing anything.
I love that. All right, Elliot, you study economic data all day long. I want to let you drive the conversation.
Well, there's less now because the government's closed, so there's less data to cover.
But... Right. What's most interesting to you right now? What do you want to talk about?
All right, so why is the economy so good? And the economy is so good because of consumer spending. Consumer spending hasn't let up, as I said earlier. It's strong. It's 70% of GDP, and it continues to be good. Now, why is it good? It's good because the rich are spending. The rich, how I define them, or they're defined in the research, is the top 10% of households. These are households that earn $250,000 or higher. So commercial pilots certainly are in that category. And these people have high incomes, they do well, they're feeling good, their portfolio's done well, their house prices went up for a long time. Now, depending on where they live, maybe not, but the stock market continues to do well. And they're spending like wild. And they're 50, 51% of all consumer spending. As long as they spend, we're good to go. And they matter more than ever because their percentage of ownership of the consumer economy has never been bigger. And this it's been happening over decades. It's gone from 35% 35 years ago to 50. So it's a straight line over 35 years. It's gone up from 33 to 50%. So it's a big increase, 0.5% a year for 35 years.
What else are you looking at?
The poor don't matter anymore. So you hear consumer confidence is lousy. Oh yeah, it's poor people who are bitching. I don't mean to sound cold, but as a macroeconomist, yeah, I care for them and I go to church, I give them charity. You know, that's how to help them. But economically, they don't have enough money to matter. It's the stock market, it's AI, the stock market driving wealth and consumer spending and wealthy consumers really spending. And they're unrelenting in their spending and they're spending on luxurious stuff. To get back to airplanes, we see Delta having spectacular earnings. And why? It's the front of the airplane that's doing the work financially for them. The cattle class in the back is good for nothing. And they're trying to expand the front of the plane by having more classes. Oh, it's a lie-down seat. Oh, it's a seat that goes back and you have a little leg rest. Oh, they're trying to segment the cabin into more and more spaces to take consumer surplus and price discriminate against all the different classes of people in the airplane. And they're doing the best job of anybody of it. But the rich are spending.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that because there was recently a Wall Street Journal article that says that Delta is actually making more money on the front of their airplane than the back of the airplane. I thought that was fascinating.
United also is doing pretty well, and American will do okay. They had a bad, crummy third quarter, but generally look at Southwest. Southwest had to change their entire business model to accommodate rich people, the high spenders, because they had no first class.
And Spirit is in bankruptcy.
Right, because the poor are doing poorly economically, and they can't afford, and they have no rich people in the front of the plane to pay the freight.
Yeah, so earlier this year, though, all the airlines had sort of reshaped their forecast.
Oh,
they had kind of forecast lower travel demand, right? They were kind of battening down the hatches. You saw like a real quick glimpse of lower airline fares, but then all of a sudden it was like fine. So like what changed? What happened, do you think, that in the forecast that made that happen?
Well, it was, I remember having to give a speech on April 2nd, the day President Trump offered the reciprocal tariffs. And I got up and said, I don't have to tell you. I have no idea what to tell you. We've never seen something like this before. Well, this was the same thing with Ed Bastian at Delta saying, well, this is not good. The chances of a recession have gone way up. We may well be hosed here because of this. And then, of course, Trump backtracked on the tariffs and they've come in very slowly and so on. But on April 2nd, we didn't know that. And everybody was running scared. And I think President Trump, obviously, we now know Trump responds to the stock market, bond market, dollar values and so on. And he pulls back when he sees the market being very unhappy with him. And that's given us as investors some protection that we know that he's not doing things just completely off the cuff here. But that was what concerned them. It concerned all of us. The recession likelihood skyrocketed from 15 or 20% to 75 or 60 or whatever it was overnight, literally. Well, if that's the case, well, then the stock market's going to collapse, dollar's going to shrink, no one's going to travel, we're all going to lose our jobs, blah, 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 blah. So it was just a knee-jerk response.
Yeah. And now we have strong travel demand, but we also have rising costs of things, you know, the tariffs, the fuel, things like that in the economy. You know, what economic indicators should pilots be looking at to understand the broader economy and like where it's really headed?
Fuel costs, by the way, haven't been bad, right? West Texas Intermediate, yeah. $60 a barrel. I mean, I don't know what Jet A is going for exactly, but it's probably okay, I'm guessing. There are rising costs, but tourist destinations and business travel, those are the two things that matter. And Vegas is a tough one because people now can gamble from the convenience of their home. They don't have to go anywhere to gamble. But Orlando's doing very well. They're busy. So it's those, and hotel occupancy rates would be a good measure as well. And especially the occupancy rates among the higher priced hotels. Don't look at the $60 hotels. Look at the $300 a night hotels and see how they're doing. But hotel occupancy is good, and the hotel of Disneyland, Disney World, Orlando, that sort of stuff, Six Flags, blah, blah, blah. Those would be pretty good measures of discretionary consumer spending. I would also look, if I could look at something else, you know, look at expensive stuff. How are Birkin bags selling at Hermes and stuff like that? Those high-end firms, if they're doing well because of North American sales, that would also give us indications of the health of the economy.
You know, earlier you said quickly, you know, the federal government doesn't have a report or a study that you normally get because they're really, the federal government is effectively offline right now. You know, we sort of gutted a lot of tenure in the government due to government layoffs or resignations or whatever it is. How is that going to play into impacting the greater economy if you've got Republicans and Democrats and effectively a federal government that's kind of offline at the moment?
Right. In the short run, this is more theatrics than anything else. This is both sides trying to make hay out of whatever it is. The negative economic consequence of this on a weekly basis are a tenth of a point of GDP ballpark. So it goes on for two months. God forbid, that's a long time. We're only halfway through. That knocks off almost a full percentage point of GDP off, you know, a given quarter. But almost all that will come roaring back when people get their paychecks all of a sudden. But the longer this goes, the more negative it becomes. Some people go bankrupt because they don't have paycheck for two paychecks. They live paycheck to paycheck. How do you pay the bills? They're lower income, but this is a serious problem. And the lapse in data becomes bigger. So, you know, a week or two, who cares? But a couple of months, we really don't know what's happening. There's private sector data out there, but it's not as good. It's not as comprehensive. It's not a representative sample. ADP is 19% of the economy of jobs, but they're not representative. LinkedIn is interesting. Indeed.com. I'm looking at all these things now to try and get a handle on, Challenger, Gray, and Christmas layoffs to get a handle on things. But nothing replaces the BLS. So the chance of making a policy mistake go up. Will the Fed lower rates in December? They probably will, especially if the government's closed for a long time. But, we do dumb things because we just don't know where we're driving. You're an instrument-rated guy and your instruments are broken and it's dark outside. You can't see. What do? Yeah, you fly into a mountain accidentally. I mean, it's unlikely, but this isn't a great thing.
Yeah.
Elliot, this is a bit rhetorical because Ryan and I are in the real estate industries and we think we have a pretty good handle on where we are in the market cycle, but I'd love to see if you have a similar thesis, or if maybe it differs. Where are we in the real estate cycle when we look at commercial real estate?
Wow.
And interest rates and that whole thing.
I think rates are coming down. Short-term rates are coming down. There's no question. That's going to be helpful for commercial real estate because those are financed on five-year terms. So the closer you are to Fed funds overnight, 30-day money, you know, that end of the yield curve is going to come down, the short end. The long end, the 10-year, the 20, the 30-year, that's a whole different story. That's based on inflation, future inflation expectations. So the shorter you are, the more likely you'll benefit from this. So let's think about it. We know multifam in the short run is not a great place. There's a lot of multifam coming on the market right now. And we know rents are flat to mildly declining over the last couple of years. Now, it depends where you own. If you own in Boston, it's particularly good because they build nothing. But if you own it in Phoenix or Miami, well, it's been nice knowing you. You may struggle. It'll turn around, but you may have a year or two, you know, of unpleasant situation. So that's, you know, office space. Again, if you have the A quality, brand new A quality office you just built, congratulations, you're going to rent up and you'll be fine. If you own some B quality office space, it may not be so pleasant. You may want to think about a conversion to some multifamily, whether it's overbuilt also, but whatever. So it really depends where you are and what you own. Manufacturing stuff is okay, you know, industrial stuff is okay. But the big two classes, multifam and office, are, you know, they're a little weaker. Office seems to be, I would say office is bottomed out.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're seeing more deals in office.
About 18 months ago, I think we saw the bottom in office.
I wouldn't say it's rip-roaring. They're ripping the cover off the ball here, but it's getting better. Deal flow volume is improving. And on the multifam side, there's also deals going on there. So price discovery is working pretty well. Buyers and sellers know what things are worth. That's an important part. But nothing is, those two sectors are not in the short run spectacular.
So you're saying office is bottomed out, or maybe it bottomed out a little while ago. Do you think that recovery is U-shaped, V-shaped, L-shaped, or just going to be a nice flat plateau for a while? Like, what, how long are we at the bottom?
No, I think there's a U-shaped process. Remember, we're building almost no office space, and we're converting some lower quality buildings, albeit, into multifamily, and we're destroying some buildings too. So the total office space in the U.S., I think in calendar 24, maybe 25, will actually be negative. This is an unusual situation. So
wow. Interesting.
Because of that, the problems won't be that intense because it's not building for a little while. Suddenly, in population growth and return to the office and so on, the buildings get filled up, or more of them get filled up more likely.
Curious to get your thoughts on industrial, just since we're on the topic. I know that between 2021 and 2024, factory spending tripled in the United States. And that was before the tariffs came in. What are your thoughts on industrial space? Because nationwide industrial vacancy is sub 4%, and most of that is functional obsolescence, where it's vacant, but it's because nobody can use it because the clearance height is too low or something like that.
Right. There is good, strong demand. Remember what went on there was we had the chips bill. So the semiconductors that Biden passed in 22 or whenever it was. And we also had the bipartisan infrastructure bill. That wasn't private sector, but it helped with roads and sewers and police stations and so on and so forth. And then there was the misnamed IRA bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, which encouraged green energy. So whatever it was, batteries, cars, windmills, solar panels, whatever it was. So there was this huge, these programs together caused construction activity to go up by about a third in 2 or 3 years. There was this massive increase. And now we're having with AI, which is a little more specific, but we've had a lot of increases in demand for space of that sort. A warehouse space, a little more vacancy in warehouse space than before, but hardly massive warehouse space vacancies. Maybe in some cities more than others, right? Because again, there's some location-specific stuff. I don't know if in Riverside, San Bernardino right now, there's lots of vacancy. They were a popular area.
So where are you not investing in real estate right now? What asset class is something that you're hands off of and you're going to wait it out?
I'm not sure there's any really, really place like that. I'm agnostic on that. If a deal comes through that I can participate in, and I'm not the only person in the deal here. I don't have $1 billion that I can spend 20 million here and 30 million there. I'm a piece of every deal that goes through, right? People bring deals to me. I go, look, yeah, that looks promising. promising. Okay, I like that idea. There's some synergistic something going on. We own a building across the street so we can save some managerial response. We did that. We owned a self-storage here and we bought a competitor there. And the competitor did badly because we were killing them because we were trying to occupy our space up. We lowered our prices and they want to sell. We go, oh, let's buy them. And now we own two within a mile of each other. We can have one person running both the stores now. So suddenly we have all these economies of scale. So it looks like a bad deal, really isn't a bad deal. I wouldn't say no to anything right now. I'd be keep your eyes peeled. Do your due diligence. But say, yeah, depressed price. This is a good value. I'll take a flyer on this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Because good ones are just good, but bad ones turn around. And bad ones at a low price are good.
Yeah.
All the rave right now is on AI, right? We talked all about how it's eliminated jobs. There's multiple investments. How does a pilot who's just flying the line, flying the airplane, how do they get involved in this AI boom? Where are you putting your money or how are you investing money to take a foothold in that area?
So I've looked into this a little bit and REITs are not the way to do it. There's no REITs that I'm aware of that are in this space. They own other racks of servers, but those racks of servers are storing your pictures. Right. Or they're helping you buy airplane tickets and reserve a hotel for a vacay. They're not at the cutting edge of this technology. So it's not through REITs. So you have to do it through these big firms. You have to take, at least I think, you have to take the plunge and say, I'm going to buy Amazon stock because they're investing heavily in this area. So you're getting you're not getting just AI there. You're getting all the other Amazon Web Services and so on and so forth, right? Or Microsoft, you're getting Azure at the same time and Outlook and whatever other services they provide. But that's, I think, the only way that you and I can participate in this. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. I looked into REITs saying, can I buy something that's going to be in this space? No. I liked, places to invest, as an aside, defense stocks are really, really good. Space looks pretty good. Precious metals look pretty good. Those are spaces that are they're nice places to go. Gold, they're undervalued. The miners are undervalued compared to the gold.
That's great advice. Yeah. Elliot, I want to be respectful of your time. Before we get to how people can find out more about you, top five indicators that you look at in order to gauge how the economy is doing and where it's going.
Oh, so inflation and unemployment obviously are critically important. GDP growth, certainly important. These are larger figures, but they're critically important. And then the last two are labor markets. It's specifically, let's look at under the covers within the unemployment rate and see what's going on now. And the ones I look at most closely are when the government's open, weekly first-time claims for unemployment. Because that's giving you insights into how many people are losing their job every week and continuing claims for unemployment, how many people are collecting unemployment. And the way I would describe the labor market now is deteriorating unequivocally, but very, very slowly, wildly slowly. It's like everyone's taking a cup of coffee. No one's in a rush. Everyone's sort of enjoying the process of looking for a job, becoming unemployed, trying to find a second job. Oh, they just lost their job because they were riffed because the factory was closed down or the shift was eliminated. But they're taking their time. Normally, when you see deterioration in the labor market, you see vertical lines going straight up and down. It's perpendicular to the horizontal line, perpendicular. And then you know you're in a recession. But now it's just going up at 20 degrees, 25 degrees, very casual, mild turn of the plane, you know, very mild. And that we may not get a recession. You can still have deterioration never having recession. You kind of get closer to stall speed at this point, to use another analogy. But, you know, unemployment can rise and GDP can still grow. But that's just unpleasant. But that's not a real big problem.
Well, this is what makes your job so hard right now, right? It's because it's the tale of two economies. It's the rich are doing really well. Yes. The poor are doing terribly. You know, you ask half the population how the economy is. They say it's terrible. The other half says it's booming.
Yes.
The indicators are left and right. It's like nobody knows whether we're going up and down. So up or down, I should say.
Right. But you have to look now at the speed of change. It's how fast are things, like the labor market, I think, is the most important set of indicators. If there are jobs, we're happy, we spend. But if we're nervous about our job and fear of losing our job, We pull back, we save money, and that's going to drive us into recession. We all start saving, we all go to hell, right? So it's a big deal here. So, but it's happening so slowly at this point that so far we've kept everything at bay. The economy's fine, even though we've had steady deterioration in the labor market. Unemployment's the highest it's been in 4 years, but it doesn't seem to matter because it's very slow and the spending's very strong. It's weird.
It's very weird. Yeah, I agree. Like, you ask a million people what they think of the economy, you're going to get a lot of different answers.
And I even, as a result, when I talk and show data on consumer confidence, I say, I don't have any confidence in the consumer confidence measures anymore. They're largely politically polluted too, because the Republicans suddenly are happy when Trump wins, Democrats are happy when Biden wins or whatever. So you go, this data, it's no longer relevant. For some reason, it's lost its usefulness.
Yeah. Well, Elliot, we really appreciate you coming on the show. How can listeners get in touch with you? How can they follow you or learn more about what you do online?
Well, thank you for asking, Ryan. So I put out every day, Tate, as you mentioned, 70 words on economics. No graphs, no ads, no charts, no links, no photos. The easiest way to get it is go to a website called Econ70, E-C-O-N, number 7, number 0, .com, and fill in the look for blog. Or easiest way, text the word bow tie, one word. I'm the bow tie economist. Text the word bow tie to the 5-digit number 66866. So text the phone number 666, and then the content is just the word bow tie, one word. And then you click return, and then you'll be prompted for an email address. You'll fill it in. You'll hear from me every day for the rest of your life. You'll never unsubscribe because you aren't allowed.
Nice.
Like I said, I've been getting your emails 5 times a week for the last 5 years, and I've never even thought about unsubscribing. It's a great touch point, super quick.
1,250 emails you've gotten from me. My gosh.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Keeps my finger on the pulse. So thank you for those.
It makes you smart at cocktail parties if they still exist, those things.
That's right.
Elliot, I got one more question. How much has ChatGPT helped you actually write that?
I'll tell you. I use ChatGPT quite a lot, and I've working how to do it. But on those cases, I get the idea. If there's some research involved, like some funny thing, it can help me. It's not infallible and so on. But what it's great at is I promise 70 words or less. I'll be at 75. I'll give it to ChatGPT and say, bring this down to 70. And then I'll look and see how they did it and go, I don't like that. Oh, I like that one. So I'll actually take what they've done and push it into what I did myself. And then sometimes I'll just have some in Kahoot kind of ideas. And I'll just talk to ChatGPT for 3 minutes and say, can you summarize this in some concise way? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it's certainly an aid and an assistant. In my company, we have a couple of people here. We've now collectively, I asked my employees, what do you want to do? Do you want to work a little bit less and make what we're making? Or do you want to take a new client? And they all said, let's take a new client. So we have enough space to take on a little more work because of ChatGPT. So we're 10%, 15% more efficient. It's a big, big, big deal for us. And we're a tiny little company.
That's huge.
That is a look inside America's economy, the world economy. You just nailed it. That's a great way to end things because it's like, you're not replacing jobs. You're just making the people who are working more efficient.
And they're going to get paid more money. They know it. I'm going to pay them more money.
Yeah.
So they want to work.
And you think about investments in companies, the dollars are going to go further.
Yeah.
And the efficiency is, the gains are going to be there. That does bring up though, the concern that the person who would have been hired to maybe do that work doesn't need to be hired. So it's not necessarily job replacement, but it might be job slowdown and growth necessarily like in certain things. I think that's a real thing to pay attention to.
Yet the productivity continues to rise.
Yeah.
Yes. Hopefully it bumps up. It's been pretty good of late. And people will change jobs. As we get older, we need more healthcare. And if we really have the deportations and self-deportations, we're going to have a labor shortage down the road when the economy is stronger. So we're going to need people to go from their jobs they are to these new jobs, taking care of you, giving the hairdresser comes to your house now, Ryan, and takes care of you and your wife and your daughter. I'm making this up, you know, but you get the idea. We go on a fancy trip and we have a massage every day now because we can afford it. Or we have everything we do now. We have our interior, our closets are now customized because of ChatGPT, and an architect comes and spends, we pay them $500 and they customize everything because they have to compete with ChatGPT. So the cost of all these awesome services we couldn't afford before are now affordable. Phone calls are free nowadays. My gosh, you know, there's a real benefit here too. I'm not so concerned. I'm optimistic. There'll be terrible things, I have no doubt. You know, the scammers will have better emails to convince us to click on something.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Don't click on anything. Don't click on anything, God.
Well, on that note.
No kidding.
Oh, I have one. Well, on that note, one thing. In a website, they'll say, da da da, and they'll say, to unsubscribe, click here. That's a scam. That's often a scam because you aren't thinking that that could be a scam, but that can also be a Trojan horse. Be careful.
100%.
Absolutely.
It's happened to me, for sure.
Oh, there you go. Yes, right. A pleasure being on, guys. You are fun.
Thank you, Elliot. It's a blast having you.
Yeah, thanks, Elliot. Yeah.
Come back anytime.
Let me know when. I hope your audience enjoys my talking. If not, let me know as well.
Okay. Well, hopefully, yeah, sign up to the newsletter because it's fantastic. I can't say enough good things about it. Thank you again, Elliot.
Text Bowtie to 66866.
And if you're listening, like and subscribe. Leave us a review.
Absolutely. You guys deserve it. Yes.
All right. There we go.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Catch you on the next one.